Your Honors, may it please the Court. My name is Nicholas Hamilton. I'm an attorney for Appellant Kevin Smith. This case involves an appeal from a dispositive relief that was granted at the district court level in an employment discrimination claim. To summarize the case, Kevin Smith alleged that he was the victim of disparate treatment in terms of his dismissal and reinstatement. There are four main areas that I'm going to discuss. The first issue is in regard to the negligent training and supervision claim. The district court ruled that any breach of duty with regard to hiring, training, and supervision of supervisors...
That's a state claim, right?
Yes, Your Honor, it's a state claim.
Why don't you start with your federal claim? You describe this as an employment discrimination claim.
Yes, Your Honor, I can do that if you'd prefer.
Well, unless if you think that you want to concentrate on the state claims, that's fine. No, I don't want to discourage you, but I thought you started out your remarks by saying that this is an employment discrimination claim, and I thought you were going to talk about...
Yes, Your Honor, and the negligent training and supervision claim is related to the employment discrimination claim, and I'll get into that later.
Your client was employed by UPS,
yes, Your Honor.
Correct? And he got into an altercation with another employee.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the policy of UPS at the time was to, and this was a physical altercation, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
It wasn't just shouting at each other. They got in a fight, right?
Yes, Your Honor. We can see that.
And wasn't UPS's policy at the time that in those instances both employees are terminated and they have to appear before a board to achieve reinstatement?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the board in this instance consisted of three representatives of the union and three representatives of UPS, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And they determined that in this altercation, your client was the aggressor and the other individual was less the aggressor. They denied your client reinstatement but granted it to the other individual, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Tell us what's wrong with all of that.
Well, it's not necessarily in the nature of the composition of the panel or the process by which the employees grieve their terminations are reinstated. You have to, in fact, look at the uniformity of outcomes relative to virtually everyone that was dismissed under these circumstances up until Kevin Smith. Prior to Kevin Smith, on the basis of discovery responses that were provided to us, there were five employees who were terminated and then reinstated by UPS for engaging in unprovoked assault on the workplace while on duty in the previous 10 years. All five of those individuals who had their jobs reinstated were non-African American. Kevin Smith was the first employee who was to have his job not reinstated. There was another African American employee, Stephen Easler, who was also terminated, and he was not reinstated as well.
Did your client raise this before the joint union management panel?
He did not complain about, he did not argue about the disparate treatment with regard to reinstatement at the time. In all fairness to him, he was not aware that he was not going to be reinstated, so he was not aware at the time that he was being discriminated against.
The union representatives on this board, do we know their racial makeup?
Kevin Smith's representative, Joseph Ray, he is Caucasian, Your Honor.
And the other two union representatives?
Upon information and belief, Your Honor, I believe, if memory serves, the representative for UPS was Richard Kubek. To my knowledge, Mr. Kubek is Caucasian.
No, Judge Hawkins isn't asking about the advocates. He's asking about the panel.
The panel, I'm unaware, Your Honor, of the racial makeup of the panel.
Is that in the record?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
Okay, then you can move right along then.
And so,
counsel, let me ask you a question, if it's Judge Gould, if I could, just to clarify. Do I understand correctly that your client does not contend that the Title VII disparate treatment or discrimination inheres in his being terminated, but rather that the discrimination is that he wasn't reinstated?
The disparate treatment, Your Honor, is evident in the reinstatement of non-African-American employees, yes, Your Honor.
So reinstatement, to answer the judge's question, your complaint is failure to reinstate?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, that's accurate.
And then do you concede that the termination after the fight was okay?
I guess we would have to, Your Honor. It's hard to argue that the terminations of both Johnny Lemos and Kevin Smith were racially motivated in that they were of different protected classes and they were terminated at the same time. However,
if your gripe is about the reinstatement, what significance, if any, is there in the fact of other African Americans being reinstated after Mr. Smith's case? In terms of the timing, are those cases relevant or not?
Well, Your Honor, Kevin Smith was terminated in December 2007. He filed his charge of discrimination on May 27, 2008. The other three African-American employees who were reinstated, Marquis Johnson, Alton Williams, and...
can't you just answer that question simply? Is there any significance to the fact that after your client's problems, that they reinstated other African-Americans? The answer is, there any significance to that? You can say yes or no.
Yes, Your Honor.
There is significance to
and
that.
And we believe it is significant because from the time that Kevin Smith filed his charge of discrimination on May 27, 2008, UPS was on notice of these claims of racial discrimination. And then less than 6 months after the charge of discrimination was filed containing these types of allegations, all of a sudden we have three reinstatements of African-American employees taking place, three employees being reinstated after they were terminated in December 2008, whenever no African-American employees had their jobs reinstated at any time in the previous 10 years.
Okay.
The argument basically is that it places in, is that these three African-American employees who were reinstated after Kevin Smith filed his charge of discrimination are not valid comparators because under the circumstances it looks as if UPS was merely trying to cover its tracks, if you will.
And so you're saying it has, first you said it has significance, now you're saying it's not valid, so it really has no significance.
Well, Your Honor, I apologize if I was being confusing. I meant that it has no significance to the nature of who Kevin Smith can validly compare to. It doesn't upset the apple cart with relative to who he can compare himself to in making out his disparate treatment claim.
Okay.
We can exclude these other three on the basis that it looks like they were reinstated in order to cover up the wrongdoing on the part of UPS. That is the argument.
Counsel, let me get your attention focused for just a moment on your claim of negligent supervision and training, the state law claim. There's no jurisdiction on that if the Title VII claim fails, right?
If the preemption claim for the preemption relates to yes, Your Honor, there would be.
You're jumping ahead in responding. In responding, his question is that the state claims standing alone would not provide a federal court with jurisdiction.
No, Your Honor, they would not. They're purely state tort claims.
Was that your question, Judge Gould?
That's right. Yeah.
And with regard to the issue of preemption, the plaintiff's argument is that negligent training and supervision claim relates to the training and supervision of supervisory personnel. And we argued that since we have the affidavit from John Filipinas that states that the collective bargaining agreement does not cover management personnel, then the claim for negligent training and supervision is not inextricably intertwined with the terms and conditions of the contract. The court disagreed, and that's of course the district court disagree. We feel they erred, and that's one of the reasons that we're here.
Are you saying that the action that if UPS was to respond properly and correctly and legally, if you will, to the complaint of lack of supervision, that this would apply exclusively to management-level personnel not covered by the CBA?
Yes, Your Honor, okay. Because it would deal with their responses to these issues that could lead to racial discrimination.
May I go back to the federal claim 1 second just to ask you, there was a problem between your client, Mr. Smith, and Mr. Lemos previously. Mr. Smith had made complaints about Mr. Lemos?
That is correct, Your Honor.
In those complaints, if you know, was there any allegation of racial treatment or the treatment on account of race?
I didn't really brief this in particular.
Tell us what the record says, if you know, whether the record deals with it. There's something about Mexican mafia. Is that in the record?
Yes, Your Honor. There are complaints in the record about Kevin Smith being victimized by a group that he referred to as the Mexican mafia. And unfortunately, he didn't come out and say that he felt that his rights were being violated in violation of Title VII. But he did make the complaint that he was being harassed by individuals who he said called themselves the Mexican Mafia, Lemos being one of them.
But did he say they were doing that because he was African American?
In all candor, Your Honor, I cannot point to any part in the record where he complained to management and said that I am being harassed on the basis of my race as an African American.
Would his complaint have been that he was harassed because he was not Mexican?
Well, I would be speculating, Your Honor. I can only talk about what is indicated in the record, and that he did complain about being harassed by a group that he called that called themselves the Mexican Mafia.
I thought he was saying he was being harassed, if I could just state this colloquially, because he wouldn't go along with improper practices that some of the drivers in the Mexican Mafia were doing.
Yes, he did complain about numerous practices that he called corruption, particularly in a package handling station out of Pahrump. And I believe that it would be accurate to say that some of the animosity that arose between the two of them dealt with his apprehension of these practices that he considered to be corruption. But being that I have 2 minutes left, Your Honor, if it pleases the Court, I wish to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Anthony Hall on behalf of the United Parcel Service, the appellee in this case. I will start by addressing the discrimination issue. And I'd like to start by addressing two of the prima facie elements which haven't been discussed so far. And I think that they are important because they are independent bases upon which this court can affirm the district court's decision. The first prima facie element that I think bears particular attention is that different people in a different race group were treated differently. In other words, similarly situated people were not treated the same as the element. In this particular case, there is no evidence whatsoever of people being treated differently in similar situations, particularly with regard to the panel, which, as we just heard, was admitted in the briefing and admitted here at oral argument, is the crux of the discrimination case. There is no discrimination with regard to the termination. Everybody who was involved...
No, we're not talking about termination. We're talking about reinstatement.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
We are talking about reinstatement by the panel, and the panel is that six-member group.
Yeah. But so there's a history, isn't there, of what kinds of reinstatements are made by the panel? And I understand it. Tell me if this is wrong, that reinstatement has occurred in most, if not all, of the cases where the two disputants have reconciled.
Yes, Your Honor. That's been one of the significant factors that has weighed in favor of the panel members deciding that they would let them come back. And the rationale makes sense. If they've reconciled...
Well, no, I wasn't asking whether it made sense. That's the historical fact, that people who have reconciled have been reinstated.
That is correct, Your Honor. Those who have reconciled...
So that the fact that Mr. Lemos refused to accept the apology and the willingness to reconcile by Mr. Smith is what caused the failure to reinstate.
No, Your Honor. No. There's a number of reasons for that. First, that was never presented to the panel. And we have to focus on what the panel knew, because that's when they're making the decision. They were never told, hey, I tried to reconcile, but Mr. Lemos won't. What they were told is he's willing to reconcile, but they have not reconciled. There is nothing that indicates, in fact, the record is the opposite, which he did not mention that Mr. Lemos was at fault. That's a new allegation that's been brought up after...
No, I'm not saying he's at fault. I'm talking about they were told that he was willing to reconcile, but there had not been any reconciliation.
That is correct. So the panel was faced with a situation where they had a finding of an aggressor who had not reconciled with the person that he had lied in wait for.
Although he was willing to reconcile, there had been no reconciliation.
That's correct.
What about Lemos?
Mr. Lemos, the record is actually vacant as to what Mr. Lemos said regarding reconciliation. His presentation to the panel focused on the fact that he was attacked and he was the victim when he came walking out through the guard shack.
He said nothing up or down about willingness to reconcile.
Correct, Your Honor.
To the panel, as far as the record shows.
As far as the record shows, that's correct. The plaintiffs have failed to establish anything about reconciliation in the record, and that was their duty if they're going to attempt to show any kind of difference.
Did the panel determine that Mr. Smith was the aggressor in this altercation?
Yes, Your Honor. That was specifically testified by Mr. Ray, and there was a number of things in the record that specifically...
Isn't that stipulated, too?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Is that called the union presentation? Was that Mr. Smith agreed that he had been the aggressor?
Your Honor, that is the presentation that was made, and that's a particular point that I think bears correcting in the record to make sure.
Well, the judge simply said that both sides agreed before the panel that Smith was the aggressor. There's no dispute about that.
There's no dispute about that. Exactly. Your Honor, in fact, one of the record on appeal statements that he made to the panel that I think is very particularly important is he specifically kept being asked, why did you go home and then come back and wait for him to walk through the guard shack? He kept saying, I wanted to settle things with Lemos. Well, what do you mean by that? I wanted to settle things. He then quoted the Bible, Book of James, and said, I wasn't going to let the sun go down upon my wrath. That's what he said, and that's in the record at ROA 486. He clearly admitted to the panel that he was not going to go to bed that night without his wrath being reckoned upon. And
what's your client's position on the state law claims?
The position on the state law claims, Your Honor, is a number of different reasons. The first thing I would point out to the court...
No, I mean, state the position. What is your client's position with respect to the state law claims? Are they preempted by Section 301?
Oh, with regard to preemption, yes, Your Honor. Yes, they would be preempted, not speaking well. And the primary reason for that is to focus on the nature of the claims that they are bringing. The nature of the negligence claims that they're attempting to assert is negligent supervision of a supervisor, which I don't understand how they have standing to assert in the first place, and negligent training as to Mr. Kubicek. The negligent training is alleged, and the supervision is alleged to be with regard to discrimination issues. The discrimination issue only occurred by the admissions of the appellants at the panel level. The panel is post-termination. It only exists because of the CBA.
Counsel, if I could interject a question for you. I thought his negligent training and supervision claims related to what he claimed was the course of harassing conduct earlier. That is, the Mexican mafia is harassing me because I won't go along with corrupt practices. And I complained to my supervisor, Ms. Martinez, and I didn't get anywhere. So they were negligent in training of supervisors and in supervising them. So why does the, if that's, if I'm, you know, I might have misstated it, but if that's the direction of his state law claim, why does that claim require interpreting a collective bargaining agreement?
Your Honor, I don't believe that that is their claim, but if that is their claim, that is even more closely related to the collective bargaining agreement, because the things he's complaining about called corruption are all specifically tasks and duties assigned pursuant to the collective bargaining agreement. It's all about how they do it and how it's managed and how they're trained with regard to those tasks. Every single one of them deal with the collective bargaining agreement. Further, if he had a complaint about corruption regarding those duties or what was happening out in Pahrump, he had an obligation and a mechanism to file a grievance about that conduct. Specifically covered within the grievance project would be his ability to complain about those things. In fact, he mentioned that he talked to a supervisor about it. That is clear admission that the supervisor is the person who he's supposed to go to. Again, why? The collective bargaining agreement says that. So those claims are even more closely tied to the collective bargaining agreement than would be the appeal panel claims, which is what I understand the claims to be, because the only negligent training that they identified, and Your Honor, this is why I understand their claims to be different, the only training that they allege to be lacking is discrimination training with regard to Mr. Kubitschek. There is no alleged training or supervision specifically lacking with regard to any specific manager outside of that. So the record indicates that the training that's lacking, allegedly, is discrimination training. The only discrimination came from the panel. The panel is 100% a creature of the collective bargaining agreement. Its standard comes from the collective bargaining agreement. It exists only because of the collective bargaining agreement. And in fact, is post-termination. And that's a very significant fact, because discrimination applies to an employer. The alleged discrimination that they're claiming here is post-termination. It's not while he was employed. The termination was done. The only basis
for appearance... Is that your view, or is that what the complaint says, or where do you get those facts from?
Which facts, Your Honor?
That's the only failure to train...
Because
properly.
that's the only fact that has been identified.
Identified by whom? Where?
By the appellants, the plaintiffs, in the district court proceedings and in the record. And the argument that they have made for lack of training, the only argument that they've made for lack of training with evidence, is that the supplement to the interrogatory indicating the training of Mr. Kubitschek lacked the specification that he was trained as to harassment. That's the only argument that was made at the district court level and that's in the record.
Made as to harassment, that's what Judge Gould asked. Not that they were trained as to their performance as a result of the board, but they weren't trained how to deal with harassment, which was occurred well before that.
We're dealing with two different things, Your Honor. The record establishes that the other managers were trained. In fact, interrogatory number 10 specifically says, here's the training for managers. The only manager they've identified that they say was not trained is Mr. Kubitschek. And that's because of the error in supplementing the interrogatories. So I would have to disagree with what Your Honor just said, because the record doesn't support that.
Suppose that someone like Mr. Smith, this is a hypothetical question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Goes to state court in Nevada and said, I used to work for UPS. I'm no longer working there. My claim in Nevada state court has nothing to do with the circumstances of my leaving the company. But while I was there, there was this atmosphere of corruption and discrimination, and it resulted from managers of that UPS, particular UPS office, not being adequately trained and not adequately training others in discrimination and supervising and detecting unlawful activity. Would that be a viable state claim?
No, Your Honor, for several reasons. First, as I've already discussed, it would be preempted.
But let's just put preemption aside for the moment. Would that be a valid state claim?
No, Your Honor, for two.
Why not?
Because there are a number of principles that prohibit it. The first is all of the Nevada discrimination cases excuse me, the Nevada negligence cases have required a physical injury as the damages. In addition, the Nevada Supreme Court has repeatedly supported the economic loss doctrine, which again is one that says if there's no physical injury, your damages are limited to economic loss under contract theories. So there are two strong lines of cases that say you cannot have a negligence claim without a physical injury. So that's the first reason why that claim could not survive in Nevada. The second reason why that claim could not survive in Nevada is because it's taking a statutorily created remedy, discrimination under Nevada NRS 613, which is an intentional discrimination standard. And it's taking it and saying it's going to now recognize a newly created duty under common law that can impose liability for negligence. The Supreme Court case of Chavez specifically departed from California on this issue. They were dealing with a wrongful termination case. And what they specifically said, unlike California, they said in Nevada there is no public policy against discrimination. There's only a statutory remedy. As a result, we will not recognize a wrongful termination public policy claim. They refused to recognize it. There is very little difference between refusing to recognize a public policy, no common law duty, and no common law duty for negligence. The entire basis for the claim of negligence is arising from a statutory obligation, which has an intentional standard and limited itself with regard to remedies and with regard to exhaustion. All of those things are thrown out the window if the Supreme Court were to go and recognize a brand new case, a brand new duty regarding discrimination. As a result,
counsel, aren't you getting into the merits of his negligent supervision or training claim under state law? That is, if it's not preempted and we said it should go to state court, assuming you won on Title VII, but we thought the court erred in finding those state court claims preempted, then what would be the procedural result? Wouldn't we send it back to the district court, affirming in part and reversing in part, and telling the district court to dismiss the state law claims without prejudice to their being brought in state court? And then in state court, UPS could make all the arguments you just made, I suppose. But I don't see how those arguments go to preemption. You might be missing something.
Your Honor, that would be a procedural method by which this court could deal with that situation. However, I do believe that there is a strong preemption argument. The preemption issue comes from the collective bargaining agreement. And again, we have to look at the nature of the claims. If the claim is corruption, that is his daily duties. The corruption he mentioned about was not filling up gas, not taking packages and leaving packages so it caused him more work to do. Those are all strictly within the course and scope of the collective bargaining agreement. So if the complaint about negligence is not dealing with the corruption, as he called it, that is clearly within the scope of the collective bargaining agreement and therefore preempted. If the claim for negligence is negligent training as to discrimination, we have the same results, because that only came about from the panel, and the panel 100% is created by the collective bargaining agreement.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel, as part of your further argument, could you just tell me from your client's perspective, where are we procedurally if we decide to affirm the district court on Title VII but think that the preemption conclusion was incorrect? What then do we do?
Well, on that basis, Your Honor, I would request I believe that we should remand to the state court level, unless, of course, the district court feels that it needs to exercise its discretion to retain jurisdictions over the purely state claims.
Yeah, I thought it couldn't have jurisdiction on the state law claims if the Title VII was gone.
Well, but given
I might
it,
be. Maybe it can. Maybe it has discretion to keep that.
In all candor, Your Honor, I have to acknowledge that, and to my based on my experience, the district court would likely have the discretion to retain the state law claim, given the advanced nature of this case and the issue of judicial efficiency. I believe that would be within the district court's discretion to do so.
Okay.
Now, Your Honor, just touching real quickly on the issue of the facts being undisputed. UPS points out that Joseph Ray's possession statement said that the facts were undisputed. Kevin Smith did not himself write that. Joseph Ray did. UPS's own possession statement gives a conflicting version of the events, and also it even says that they both engaged in unprovoked assault, which is a logical impossibility. Thank you, Your Honor.
Now, you say that this statement of undisputed facts submitted by the union...
I'm sorry, it's the position statement. It's ROA 846.
Yes, that's a position statement by the union on behalf of whom? Is that not on behalf of... They were representing Kevin Smith?
Yes, Your Honor, the union was representing Kevin Smith.
And the position statement, was there a position statement on his behalf?
Yes, Your Honor.
And did he disagree with any of the things in the position statement?
To my knowledge, not vocally at the time. However,
when
I think
you say not vocally, how did he do it, in writing?
I'm not aware of any way that he contradicted Joseph Ray's position at the panel meeting, Your Honor.
Well, you know, I mean, there are some problems with all of this, but the union represented both of these individuals in the same proceeding?
Yes, Your Honor.
And was it the same representative who represented them both?
Yes, Your Honor.
And there was no conflict between the two?
No, what I mean is that...
All right, well, I suppose that doesn't have too much to do with the outcome, although it might have to do with a different type of suit that could have been brought. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Judge Reinhardt, could we take a brief recess,
yes,
please?
Yes, certainly we will.
Before the next case?
Yes. Absolutely. The court will take a brief recess before the final case of the morning.
All rise. The court stands at recess.
You'll come get us.